Hello, this is another episode of One Question with Tim
and Paul,
where we answer one question each podcast episode. Today's question is, do we need to change the technology that drives the game of golf for the professionals to limit distance and allow courses to be played the same way they always have in the past?
How the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test.
Change it.
Turn and face the strain.
Change it.
Don't want to be a richer man.
Change it.
Turn and face the strain.
Change
it. It's going to have to be a different man.
Paul, how are you today?
Great, Tim. How are you doing?
Good.
Nice intro.
Hey, thank you. I try. It's all about change today, though, and change in the game of golf. This week, after the Colonial, Paul, Colin Montgomery made some news on BBC 5 Live Sport Radio across the pond, where he started talking about how the incredible distance that bulked up Bryson DeChambeau got was kind of altering the game a little bit. I think the stat that he gave was that in the third round, DeChambeau had only four holes where he had more than 100 yards left to the green after his drive.
Correct. And that's
Pretty crazy.
Also taking into account that there's four par threes on that course. So basically four of the 18 holes. That's it.
Yeah, so and so, I think he went on to mention that, you know, the average carry of his drives, of DeChambeau's drives, was, you know, 330, could get up to 330. I mean, these are distances that, quite frankly, we haven't seen before, and it's a combination of the physical changes that DeChambeau made over the last couple months when he hasn't been playing. Clearly, he put on 20-30 pounds of muscle, they say, and. He's a tinkerer. He's a scientist with his tools. So, he's got a combination of driver and golf ball along with his physical assets that has really built for, you know, this distance. And I think we first saw it, Paul, back with Tiger. Tiger was longer than everyone else on tour at that time. And what did they start doing, Paul?
Tiger proofing.
Yeah, they started tiger proofing courses. They started changing the course itself as much as they could to accommodate longer distances. It's possible right now that courses have been lengthened. The traditional favorite, Augusta, St. Andrews, you name it, all the spots on the PGA Tour. Some of those have been distanced as far as they can, right? You can't just keep going further back. At some point, you run out of actual room. And I think that's kind of where we're at with some of these golf venues. So the question is, what does golf do to maintain the integrity of the game at the professional level, but also for amateurs going forward? And there's a series of things that could be done to do that. But let's hear first a little bit more from Colin Montgomery.
The driving statistics, he's playing with Dustin Johnson there the first 2 days, and he's giving Dustin Johnson 25 yards off the tee. Now, he's no slouch, believe me. This is something that we've never seen. And, you know, the RNA and the USGA have talked about, you know, trying to reduce the golf ball or trying to reduce the club specs or whatever, but they can do nothing about the athleticism of the players themselves.
So how much do you think the changes in golf is due to just there being better athletes, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, I think being better athletes is a big part of it. I mean, just look at golfers from the 70s and look at the golfers today. Like, obviously, nutrition, workout regimens have gotten much more intense, leading to probably hitting the ball further. But, I mean, like Colin's talking about, also the technology is making the ball go a lot further as well. And whether that be the ball or the golf clubs or whatever, I mean, even the average golfer, you know, we go out, we get a new driver, all of a sudden we get 20 more yards. out of our drive that we didn't have 2 weeks ago when we were playing.
And I think one thing that, and I know we had an extensive pre-show conversation about all this that kind of brought up some things. One thing that I thought was interesting was when you look at technology, how it impacts the amateur golfer and how it impacts the professional golfer are potentially very different, right? Technology to an amateur golfer to 12 to 20 handicaps has made a significant difference in their golf games, right? Controls spin, adds distance for people where distance, you know, really makes, you know, a significant difference. You know, realistically, a pro that's hitting, you know, 280 to 300 every time, do they need 20 more yards to be a successful golfer? I mean, it certainly helps. Every bit helps. But when you're hitting 230, when you're carrying 230 or 240 and you can get up to 265, that makes a big difference, especially sure. when your iron play, that maybe changes you from a 6 iron to a, you know, 8 iron in, you know, or a 9 iron. All of a sudden, and the technology of those clubs is helping make all your miss hits better, right? You're not out in the woods as often. So technology really has benefited the amateur golfer. I would argue that the clubs have benefited the professional golfer, but not nearly as much.
The driver more so than the irons. I mean,
well, compared to persimmon, right? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But if you look at the, like, go back to the, you know, the Big Bertha, the beginning of the Big Bertha days in the, what would that have been, the mid-90s?
Probably even earlier, but yeah, I mean, around there.
Yeah, before the super big club heads, you know, the,
right.
You know, or when Tiger was playing with the with the Titleist driver, right? That's not a
look
big,
at that. Yeah,
that's
look
not
at,
a big
look
head.
Look at the 97 Masters and Tiger's driver, which at the time was considered huge.
Yeah, which is kind of like a three wood now.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Big Bertha is a three wood,
yep.
Essentially. You know, put a little more loft on it, but that's how big the head is.
So, you know, clearly technology has helped give distance, but when I think of club advancements and a lot of the R&D put into clubs, that's more for the, I think, more for the amateur golfer. So now the question comes, if the professional golfer is getting some benefit from technology and they're also amping up their athleticism, now the combination of those two things is putting them in a position where they're dominating golf courses and they can really fly into greens and at pins with really high irons and wedges, and it takes a lot of trouble out of play. It changes the way you have to play a course when you're approaching the green and you know you're going to land it within 10, 20 feet of the pin, as opposed to have to, you know, have to come in and maybe it's a bounce and a hop or a, you know, what have you. I guess the question is this something that needs to be regulated? And I get that's where Colin Montgomery kind of took his thoughts, is it does golf need to be regulated?
Do we do what Wimbledon did a few years ago and reduce the pace of the ball? You know, do we do something? Because we've got to protect these traditional courses. I've always been an advocate of what Jack Nicklaus has been saying, and you know, we need a professional golf ball that goes 80-85% the distance it does now, and that protects our courses. The long hitters will still be the longest, but it protects our courses. And then your 600-yard par 5 will be a three-shot hole, which a par 5 should be. So it's, yeah, I think we have to think about protecting the classic courses of the world.
Colin's very worried about the classic courses, Paul.
He talks a lot about the classic courses, and he makes a, you know, fair point. When you first posed this question to me, what? Monday or Tuesday,
yeah,
of this week, you know, you said listen to this, and you asked me the question, and I was like, no way.
Yeah, you gave like, me an you gave me an adamant no. It wasn't even any explanation. Yeah. It was like very emphatic. Right. No, they should not change anything about the technology for professional golfers.
Right, and you know, and we'll get more into that later on how my thoughts have developed as I listened. Then I listened to him, and I kind of understood some of the things that he was saying. But the short of the answer, I mean, he wants to protect the courses, but don't you also like, I mean, I don't want every par 5 to be a 3-shot hole. I like the drama of going for it in a going forward in two, the risk reward. So maybe that's what you know, we talk about these courses and how do we make it maybe make it riskier to go for two.
Well, but if you think about it, though, when right now, what, most par fives, what's that second shot approach right now for these guys? A 6-iron? If it's a long par, 6-7-iron even, for a lot of these par fives they're coming in at?
I don't know. I don't know about that. I mean, certainly not in the majors. The majors, I mean, they're long. Most of these courses that these guys, or these par fives that these guys are playing are like, I mean, it's 570 min for a par five.
So if it's if it
is like a 540 yard par five, it's got like a break in it where you got to land it shorter. I mean,
well, let's do some math for it.
It's still about a 240 yard second shot usually.
So 220 to 240, which if you look at what a average pro tour 6-iron is going to go 220. 215?
6-iron? I don't think it. No. Maybe.
I mean, if I just kind of go off of myself. If I can hit a 6-iron, let me do my quick calculations. If I can hit it 180, 185, somewhere in there, 180?
Yeah.
Then they've got to be at 215.
I guess I'd have to look at the numbers on that. I still think I mean, 215.
I mean, think they're hitting a 3-wood.
240.
Well, they're hitting a 3-wood off the, like, that's going 300, you know, 275. If they need a 3-wood into a par 5, it's got to be a 650-yard par 5.
But
and they can get there in two.
240 in. But I'm saying if you're 240 in and your 3-wood goes 275, that's a huge leap to go 240 to 240 being a 6-iron. That's a huge.
No, I said 215. So I mean, I think 240 would be a good distance in. Then you're talking about a long iron, right? And there is some risk. And I mean, I think when you look at they're just so accurate with even 4 and 5 irons coming into greens. Yeah. You've really got to put it.
Well, they're professionals too. I mean, they're supposed to be accurate.
Well, that's true. The course at par five
was very accurate. He wasn't like. Arnold Palmer was very accurate.
Well, let's go back to what, by definition, though, isn't a par five is a hole that you should get a par in with five shots. If we're talking about getting to the green in two, like as the default, it's going to be a par 4 1/4, 4 and 4.5 at the most. It's not a par 5.
I mean, I think that's how you see most, but I think that's how you see most par fives play. And I also think, through the history of golf, you've seen par fives play at the 4.5 to 4.7 range on any given four-day tournament.
Yeah, like, and I'm not saying that I disagree. I love the drop. I mean, this is what Augusta does beautifully is, like, they are reachable, but you make any error, and it's catastrophe, right? Going into 13 and 15. That's what makes it really fun. On the front, you know, 8 is up the hill, and you know it's difficult to get there in two, but you can. But you've got to whale the drive, and then you've got to you know kind of hook that, you know, usually a wood in uphill to a blind, you know, landing spot, and then two's an interesting one. Is it even if you go for it at Augusta on two, you're hoping to get that run out into the green, right? You're not flying the green. You're definitely bounding it down the hill and around, you know, bending it around that sand trap with the contour of the green, right? So those are great par fives because they still challenge the pros to do really interesting things. They don't play like par fours. I think we're starting to see many par fives in the normal tour play more like long par fours. And I guess that's where you lose the essence of you know, the challenge of two holes of nine as a par five. You know, that's what it brings.
Yeah, driver 8-9-iron on a par five is not fun or challenging. I think that's less than more. I mean, we're watching one tournament. We probably microanalyzed it a little bit because it had been so long. It was such a shock to see him and what he was doing.
Yeah.
That maybe it set off some alarms, but you know, at the end of the day, I'm not crapping on the Colonial Tournament or anything like that, and it's definitely had a great field this year, but I mean, is it known as like a really tough tournament?
I couldn't even tell you. Right?
Is it TPC Sawgrass? Is it, you know, I'm thinking a non-major tournament.
Yeah.
You know, is it the Players Championship? Is it what's the one in Hartford? I forget what it's called now.
The TPC Hartford. I forget what the tournament's called, but at the TPC River Highlands, isn't that it?
Yeah. I mean, those are some tough tournaments. I mean, let's see how they play out there versus maybe this.
Well, and you also know, Paul, it doesn't really matter. I mean, really, at the end of the day, until it starts impacting the major golf tournaments, does it really matter? Like, you can go, if Bryson went and won, you know, three tournaments leading up to the U.S. Open, but then his distance didn't pay off in the U.S. Open because, you know, he's got such a flat driver and he's hitting the ball so hard, his control is off and he's in the rough and he just blows up, right? And then he comes to the British and, you know, he's not used to the link style of golf, even though he has great distance, it doesn't translate. And so on and so forth, right? At Augusta, he tries to overpower it and, you know, he's just not ready for it. Let's say he goes through, he has a good regular season, but doesn't win any of the major tournaments. It doesn't, to my mind, it doesn't really matter that he gained 30 yards off the tee. It didn't help him.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm. True. Valid point.
So I think, I'll come back to, I do think doing something to the golf ball or changing the very nature of the equipment of the game and limiting it is, it's a little soon to enact a rule because it hasn't impacted the major tournaments as much yet. And that's really what matters. If it starts to, that's when I think you start to really consider this.
And we've gone through phases like this. Like we said, they tiger-proof course. I get we're talking about not, you know, protecting these original golf courses or the classics, as he says. You're going to run out of real estate to lengthen the course. So, you know, that's obviously the next logical thing that you got to look into. But I just don't know if we're there today.
I also think you have to consider the source of the argument, right, in Montgomery, who was a great ball striker and ball flighter. Like, growing up in Scotland, he learned to hit all sorts of types of shots. He learned the benefit of, you know, maneuvering a golf ball around a course a lot of different ways. And that's really what, I think that's probably what he appreciates about being a professional golfer. And he sees that these guys don't have to do that because it's not required of them as much. Some of that, you know, finesse in that mid-iron game and having to shape shots a lot of different ways and be really creative, that he feels like they're just overpowering it. And maybe that's true, but I think he's probably more sensitive to it than, you know, a lot of other professionals or the fans who, you know, chicks dig the long ball, right, Paul?
I guess so. That's what they say.
So I think we know what Colin's answer is going to be here, but I'll play it anyway.
Something has to be done or else these classic courses of the world are, well, they just can't be used. We'll have to be building new courses.
Which, of course, no one wants new courses. We want to be able to see things on the greatest stage, on the greatest courses, and we don't want to see those compromised. Montgomery clearly in favor of some kind of regulation at the pro level. Paul, are you there yet?
As I said, no, I'm not there yet. But I'm not an emphatic no like I was when I sent that text. You know, you said, you know, did we get to the point where you talked about the golf ball? I don't want to give anything away, but
I don't go for it.
All right. Well, I mean, like the thing was, you know, to take 15 to 20%.
Oh yes. Yeah.
So, you know, that I was emphatic. I was like, no, that, you know, I just don't like that. And there was a multitude of reasons. Like in my mind is like, you know, people train, they use these golf balls, you know, then they become pro, and then now they have to go and use this golf ball that's not what they're used to. could cause problems. And then I was like thinking about, well, you know, and then I was reading about Bryson, and I'm like, well, Bryson's using a 5.5 degree driver, which to me is just ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't know how you have any control with it, but he's pulling off control. But that's certainly going to give you a lot more roll and a lot more distance if you're squaring up a 5.5 degree driver. So I was like, let's focus more on that. And then I was like, well, then I'm a hypocrite because that's equipment. Golf ball's an equipment. So he just wants to change the golf ball. If I want to change the driver, like they change the belly putter or whatever, you know, like I'm still changing equipment. So my short answer is I'm not there yet, but I understand the point that we might get to that point where we're going to have to make some changes. The last thing I would want to see is a change to the golf ball. Personally, for me, I'd like to figure out another way to do it. And I told you this when we were talking about this earlier, is I like the fact that I can play the same ball that Tiger Woods plays. Or, like, there's something about that is nice. Although Tiger doesn't play Titleist anymore, I still play Titleist. But there was something about, like, my drive towards Titleist was because Tiger Woods was using it. And it was way early. I never got his Nikes, but at the end of the day, I fell in love with that ball, and they pros use Pro V1s. If when I'm using a Pro V1, I know I'm using the ball that the players are using, and there's something fun about that.
Yeah, and you know, I would say on the equipment side, you know, the club side, golf's interesting. Not everyone has the same clubs in their bag, right? You've got every bag is unique. So once you start to regulate that, you're impacting certain players but not others, right? Like you're setting rules that aren't going to impact the entire field, because not the entire field is going to certain extremes on the with their bag. So say you said your driver has to have at least a 6.5 degree loft. That might impact Bryson and maybe one other player, if any. You know, like it. You know, mm-hmm. So I feel like then you're making rules for one or two or three or four golfers, right? Not for the entire field. So I think it's hard. I think it's a hard thing to, you know, to regulate. Where the ball, yeah. Though, where the ball, you can say 100% of the field. And I think Montgomery says this in a clip. I don't have, but I heard he says. He's in favor of the tournament gives you your golf balls. They're all, everyone has the same golf ball with the same amount of the same feel. It's a standardized golf ball. Now the equipment manufacturers make that would never happen because yeah. of the money.
It's just never
happened. Never happen.
Yeah.
But I think that's a little bit more interesting because you can't tell everyone to use the same degree loft of club or the same, you know, whatever, 14 clubs in the bag or 13 for whatever the number is.
13. But you can, I mean, you do tell them that. You do tell them you can only have this many clubs. And you can.
No, but you don't tell them it has to be these specific clubs. Like regulate,
oh,
you
no,
know, like
sure.
There's
yeah.
some play
with
it.
That's part of the strategy of golf.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, isn't there some tournaments Phil's out there carrying two drivers?
He like, has.
Who does that besides Phil? But
I've been known to carry two drivers, Paul. Of course, mine is.
You have 17 clubs in your bag, Jim.
apparently, I do have a 18 degree driver, a 14 degree driver, and a I've got a lot of different clubs. None of them seem to do what the pros do, though, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, I'm no way they could regulate the golf ball like that. Like this is the Masters ball, and I mean, I'm just trying to think, like
you know, you mentioned it though.
It's like telling a baseball player that you're a second baseman, you have to use this glove when this guy's been using this glove
But baseball regulates the golf ball. I mean, the golf ball, the baseball, the ball in play is not chosen by each team. The gloves are, but the ball is not. The NFL might be the closest, and we saw what trouble that got people into, where you could use your own footballs.
I mean, the teams supply the balls, but it is.
But they all come from the same mud pile in whatever, North Carolina.
But it's a base. I mean, it's different than a golf ball. Like a golf ball, like Some people like a softer golf ball. People like, I mean, it's just.
I agree with you.
Though. Maybe the standardization should have been there from the beginning, but you can't, like, you can't do it now. Now, if they want to drop it to 20% and all that, that's a decision they're going to make. I just think, again, you said, are we changing it for three people?
Yeah.
Like, are we hurting the majority so that three people have longer second shots into a par five?
And until those three players, like if you showed me a graph that said people that drive the ball 320 and over win X percent more of the time, right? Then maybe and apply that to majors and you know show me that it's because of their distance that they're overpowering the field in majors. And maybe Brooks Koepka is kind of doing that. He's the first player that I think has, you know, I guess Tiger did it, but he was great at everything. So I think that's hard, you know, that you can't really say Tiger was all about just his distance. But Koepka maybe.
No, but look at Jordan Spieth. Like, let's look at him. Like, he's a very below average. He's an accurate driver, but distance wise, you know, on the tour, he's probably near the bottom.
Yep.
But he's an amazing shot maker. He's a fantastic putter.
Yep.
But now you take 20% distant or 20% of a golf ball, like you give him
80%. That probably crushes his game.
It kills him.
Yeah, and I think that it's like right now, you know, the Zach Johnsons of the world, the Justin Leonards back in the day, they compete for they're major champions, right? They never had the distance. They were able to compete. It still seems to me that all types of golfers are able to compete and win, and we haven't seen that the distance has you know changed that ratio yet. Now maybe we'll start to, and that's once again I'll come back to. Once we start to see the change and the domination by a very small set of a certain type of golfer in major championships, then I think you need to make a change. I don't think we're there yet. But maybe we're headed that direction, and I do think it's good to raise the questions before the problem arises. So I think in that respect, I think it's a good conversation to consider, and that golf better be thinking about, okay, if we do have to change something, the governing bodies, what would that look like? And start making those plans now and start thinking about that. Get a plan in place. Don't get reactive once you have to. Sounds like, Paul, once again, second question, we're in some pretty good agreement on the answer. That's been our one question for this week.
Change it. Don't want to be a richer man.